Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC. And I'm joined by my partner in organizing, the one who takes full credit for all of her work, who needs no one to get her where she has gotten the niece.
Oh, damn. Where's this coming from? 100% full credit. Me and Kanye are very clear on our contributions to society, and we would like you to know that we are the voice of a generation.
There you go. So, Grammys 2016 took place on, was it Sunday or Monday? Monday? I don't even know, because they've become that irrelevant in my life. Something I used to DVR because of time difference, so I could watch all of it. I forgot about. Grammys took place this week. Let's put it like that. And let's see where to start. I'm going to start with the thing that I found most frustrating. One of the greats passed away and received no tribute.
Even though she won 9 Grammys during her lifetime.
9 Grammys. And they couldn't be bothered to mention her name, give her a tribute. Natalie Cole, people. Natalie Cole. I don't know how. I don't know who. I don't know what. Because let me tell you this. No hate. I really respect Lady Gaga. I think she's an amazing entertainer. I love her craft. And her tribute was solid. It was professional. But it was generic. I don't know who did the production, the artistic direction on it, but it was super boring. So yeah. We've got time to honor David Bowie. And we've talked about his mixed legacy on here. But we have no time for Natalie Cole. What's that about?
Nah. We don't have no time for Natalie Cole.
Black women.
Well, you knew this, but you know this, man.
I don't know this. Natalie Cole, and she came from a great, like, that's all I have for it.
But we got time for that Adele performance. And this is why, as talented as I believe Adele is, I'm not interested. I'm not buying no records. I'd be turning it off. I'd be the Adele hate club number one. Not because I dislike her or I think anything that she's doing is wrong personally. It's just because I feel like she is where she is because she is white. And that is so clear when you look at artists like Jasmine Sullivan or artists like Jill Scott. And you look at Adele and you're like, really? Okay. So I see where this is going. It's you and Sam Smith are now
They came from the same school.
Right.
Here
but
in
that
the
whole
UK,
school, that whole that UK thing, that doesn't work
sound,
unless you're white.
That little technical, whatever, whatever. Look, what did Adele say? A microphone fell on the keys. Who cares? She suffers from stage fright. She cried the whole day and came and redeemed herself
so
on
likeable.
Ellen. She's so likable. You know, you did it. Who cares? Boring. At least Taylor Swift, as basic as she is, keeps it interesting. It's funny that she is popping off on Kanye in her acceptance speech, saying he had nothing to do with jumpstarting her career, which he did. And yet she keeps herself major relevant by bringing up Kanye, even though she did it anonymously. We all knew who she was talking about.
Right. So, well, I mean, Taylor Swift pulled a white feminist move, right?
Of course.
Right. So she is getting the second Grammy over what? Was it Kendrick Lamar? She got that Grammy? Wait, she got that Grammy over Alabama Shakes for this money, Taylor Swift. She got it for that shit. Right?
So what it
bad blood. Right. She got it for that shit. She could make that on a Friday from 2 to 3.
Right.
That whole album. That album was so basic. And she got it and then had the nerve to get up there talking about merits when her white ass know that she wouldn't be where her white ass is unless she was white. Come on now. Taylor, please. Stop. That is a white feminist move 101.
She worked hard. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. Oh, she worked very hard.
Pulled herself up by them bootstraps. Mm-hmm. You know how they do in the South. Well, Kanye, while he slowly loses his mind in public, came back and said that he had okayed his lyrics with her in the first place. Now, I find that hard to believe that someone like Kanye would even think that he has to okay his lyrics.
Well, Kanye lives for white approval.
That
what is
true.
His whole fashion career about, right? Like, what is his whole white aspirational shit about where he has, you know,
he goes from
Amber, who is a 10, to Kim, who is a 6. I'm sorry. who is the sixth with surgery. Stop. I can't.
With surgery. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he, you know, king of misogynoir, hates black women, and then edifies his black mama.
Yes.
Right. And we've seen this before, right? We've seen this with R. Kelly, who rapes underage black women, and then at the same time goes on to talk about how his mom is an angel high in heaven and shit. You know, she got the best of everything. Edification of people mama does not necessarily mean that they have, that they love black women. It means that they think their mama is in a special category. Right. Like she's outside of the hate that they have for black women. And that's just not how that works. And it's very normal. It's that Madonna whore shit, right?
Right.
You know, your mama Madonna and everybody else a whore.
Mm-hmm. Well, the public continued to be confused, you know, after the Wiz and white folks not understanding that there is a white Wiz, it's called the Wizard of Oz. We experienced some backlash for the reason I'm trying to go to New York this year.
Hamilton,
the Broadway play of century.
This is as high yellow as black people do.
Yella, as we can get.
We put on, like, he could really be Rachel Dolezal in it. I don't know. I don't know.
He flow a little too well for that.
Hi, Yella. Hi. And they still like, wait. White. So, you know, this is what gets me about the colorblind people. People want to get on me about being real clear about one drop theory. But the biggest enforcers of one drop theory are white people.
Yes.
This bro, if he took a genetic test, he would be whiter than Mariah Carey. And this bro is dealing with like probably like a good 80% European ancestry. And that's still not enough for them. Whiteness
Alexander
has to be 100%.
Hamilton.
This dude was lighter than an Italian. You know, I mean, like, come on. They are so clear on what whiteness is. And then they want to catch feelings when we like, oh, this is what whiteness is. They're like, what? I'm a person. I'm a human being.
But what I didn't understand about that whole conversation is everybody in that story is white. Mm. 85% of the people on the stage are non-white. So why is it that everyone's concerned about Hamilton specifically being white?
Because he's the prominent figure. He is the founder of the country. And just like they did with Jesus, white folks in America have racialized, you know, the founding story, the America's founding story in a way that is different than when it was originally racialized. Not to say that they weren't like totally high on manifest destiny and patriarchy and all this bullshit. They were also bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. But they've racialized it in a modern way. Just like, you know, they like went back in history and made Jesus this like gun-toting, bootstrapper, Republican, right? Like, blonde eye, blue eyes, dude in the middle of the desert, you know.
Oh, you're talking about Mormon.
I'm talking about most American, like if you look at the iconography of Jesus in Christian churches, even black churches, is what this dude look like. This is who they think this dude is. If you look at our current political landscape, when people talk about, like Ted Cruz said, I'm a Christian before I'm an American, this is what he's talking about. That the mainstream representation of Christ that is pushed out and that is very popularized in America is one that where he is racialized and he has political leanings, mm-hmm, that are completely the opposite of what he was saying in the Bible. But that's another story.
But Alexander Hamilton has this great story. He also had a hard childhood. He pulled himself up.
That's wonderful.
But he cannot be played by a black. That is not a story.
No, but they could be the gods of Egypt.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So,
you know,
let's please the listeners, because they obviously know that there is a story we haven't touched on yet about the Grammys. And that story is the Chang Gang.
Let me tell you something.
What you gonna tell?
It just came to me that Kendrick is actually my long lost brother.
Oh wow!
And we are connecting. Mm. It's on deep telepathic levels. This dude came with it. That was such a brilliant performance, and those white folks were so scared and confused.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because yes, if you look at the audience, they didn't know what was
the
happening.
Black folks were like, yeah, you saw Common's face.
Common was like,
yes!
I would have
done that. Yeah. What?
I was surprised to see Common's face, because Common has been real new black. You know, after he won that Oscar, he said, "Can we all just get along?" So
I know what I feel about Common. I feel like Common a little bit low IQ. I feel like Common feel like Common like barbecue shrimp. I feel like he like real shrimp.
Okay.
He like cocktail shrimp. That's what I feel about Common. Okay. Because I feel like just, you know, first of all, he don't speak more than like 2 miles a minute. And on top of that, all his raps sound like this. When a hip hop comes on this, and I talk like this because I really, I'm like, I don't get Common's appeal. I've never gotten Common's appeal. And, you know, we came up at the same time, me and Common the same age, whatever. But I don't get Common's appeal. And I don't really think that he's a very deep thinker. I think that he's just like every other dude up in the poetry joint. Like, I'm real deep because I'm not overtly crazy. And I'm sort of cute. And so people give him so much shine. But Common could have did everything that Kendrick has done. But, you know.
Obviously not. We needed it to come from the hue that Lamar is. But while you talk.
Talking
yes.
Talking colorism.
Talking colorism.
That racist against Latin people.
Take your internalized oppression. So the reason I say that it's interesting that you are of your long lost brother's performance is because Janaya Khan on her blog and Lasha on Salon went in. One titled theirs, If You're Dissing the Sisters, You Ain't Fighting the Power. Kendrick hailed, Beyonce failed. And on Salon, Lasha's, or Lasha, I'm not sure how she pronounces it. I'm sure I'm jacking it up either way. Her article was titled, Kendrick Lamar Won't Face Backlash Like Beyonce. Socially Conscious Art, Sexual Expression, and the Policing of Black Women's Politics. And what both of these writers said or wrote was, Beyonce, Black woman, used her platform, criticized for it, criticized for using her brand, criticized for using this and that and the other. She can't be a part of the revolution. Lamar uses an even larger platform in the music realm because apparently there's a direct correlation with performances at the Grammys and a spike in record sales.
Mm-hmm.
Uses his platform, gets nothing but love. There's not one think piece that has anything negative to say about his role in the revolution.
I've seen negative things. I mean, the negative things that I've seen.
You've seen them like you saw it with Beyonce?
Not as much as I saw it with Beyonce. It's not going to come from white people, but negative things within, you know, the Black sphere.
That's what people are talking about.
In
there
the
was
sense
a lot of negativity.
Which we see often, right? Like, not revolutionary enough. Like, you know, Kendrick, Obama lackey. Kendrick over here talking about my brother's keeper, you know, and there's some criticism around that. That's the kind of criticism that I've seen, but I haven't seen it like, you know, but here's the thing. Kendrick was performing what he's known for. I mean, like, this was not, none of the things that he performed were really new. Mm-hmm. Like, his whole album already had these lyrics in it. As a matter of fact, the lyrics were even more intense on the album. He had sort of like sanitized it for the Grammys a bit. That being the case, what we are seeing with Beyonce is a turn, right? In a way that we're not seeing that with Kendrick. We already knew who this dude was and what this dude was about.
Well, To Pimp a Butterfly came out last year, but that's not to say that we already knew what he was about. Yes, the album was released last year.
It's going to be all right. Where he already is doing
To Pimp a Butterfly came out last year. That album came out last year. Formation just dropped. But it's not like we have this long history to look back on of Lamar.
We got a year more than we got with Beyonce. Beyonce wasn't talking about the police a year ago. He was. Right. So that there's also that is that when you shift the game up on people, they're like, oh, I thought this was tic-tac-toe. Now you doing Hangman? What's going on? You know, so that's what's happening with Beyonce a little bit. But I don't really think that the backlash has any teeth with Beyonce.
But the backlash from within the community. I don't care about white people trying to protest at the NFL headquarters. I'm talking about Black people criticizing Beyonce in a way that they have felt no need to criticize Kendrick for. Using a commercial platform, using his music career, he is accepted as a part of the revolution, a part of the solution. And Beyonce is like, oh no, you're a brand and you're just trying to latch on to something to get some record sales.
Here's the thing that COINTELPRO did. Beyond destroying so many left-wing organizations, COINTELPRO was an FBI program that came out, you know, we didn't know what was happening while it was happening in the 60s and 70s and 50s, but it came out later that the FBI targeted the Black Panthers, they targeted Martin Luther King, they targeted Malcolm X, anybody that showed any level of leadership and advocacy for rights, they targeted them, they tapped them, they terrorized them, And in some cases, they assassinated them, like in the case of Freddie Hampton, or imprisoned them, like in the case of Asada. That being what it is that when someone introduces themselves to you and they have a specific program and you feel like you can connect with it and you know what that's about, their Kendrick did by not shifting is that he already had a track record and he already had trust. He was already putting these issues in his videos. He was already talking about these issues in interviews, right? He had already tried to involve and engage himself in the community around these issues. Beyonce, even though she was doing stuff with some homeless people in Texas and some Black Lives Matter refreshments at the protest or whatever she was doing, right? It was never an overt thing that Beyonce, I don't even think she ever talked in an interview in the last 4 years, right? Like, I mean, like Beyonce is an enigma to a certain extent and she wants it that way. But because, you know, we're not ready for Bootylicious to be talking about these things.
But Kendrick Lamar on his ASAP Rocky, one of my favorite songs, you know, I am a bad feminist, fucking problems. In the same verse, he's talking about a threesome and rejecting capitalism.
Oh, but you know that. You know that men are always going to be able to have their patriarchy. Okay. They taking it to the Revolutionary Party. They taking patriarchy with them. They spiking the drinks. They spiking the drink.
Okay, fine. All of that being said, why is it that Kendrick, also from the white music critic, can get so much love? His performance, as I told you, I forgot about the Grammys. I woke up to reading Kendrick Lamar, the only performance you have to watch from the Grammys, the only performance that mattered. This is across the board.
Mm-hmm.
White people are mad at Beyonce. Is it for different reasons? I feel like this is a matter of patriarchy.
I definitely think so, too. I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is that Beyonce, also within the Black community, has not engendered the trust around that. Like if NDRE came up and said, you know, this, and these are problems in the community, everybody like, yeah, you know, you're ready for that from NDRE. Now, if it came from like Tamar Braxton, right? Like, so, or, you know, like someone who you're not, like, you're used to seeing.
Tamar gonna come for you.
I know she will. I think she's fabulous. But we're not used to seeing her in that light. Right. We're not used to seeing her politicized around these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So then it becomes like, oh, like, what?
Okay. Moving on to our second segment. I, of course, would love to spend some time on all the great Black queer women doing things this week. We already posted on Facebook about the gloriousness that is Skye Patrick, who is the first African-American director of the county library in LA. And that is huge. I mean, I look at the picture, I almost saw myself. Did you look at the picture that comes up, the thumbnail that comes up? Did you think it was me? I thought it was me.
No, I didn't think it was you.
You bet it was me. You bet it was me.
That was aspiration.
You bet. She's doing great things for Los Angeles public libraries. She's talking about reminding people of the point of the public library and its purpose in the community. She, I want to say, is queer. I'm pretty sure I know that from the grapevine, but looking at the picture.
Oh, see. Look at you. Judge your book by its cover.
I want to say I'm not wrong.
Okay.
We had the beautiful and wonderful and glorious woman, Charlene Carruthers, the president of BYP 100, Black Youth Project 100. We've talked about that before. She's the national director, and she's a board member for Black Reproductive Justice Organization, Sister Song. And she really believes in activism with the youth. She says that's where it has to start. And she was interviewed this week, and she said all of her activism is done through a Black queer feminist lens. Why is it important?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it important? Why do we need the Black queer feminist lens?
You know, why is it important? Like, I feel like it's a trick question. Like, the answer is B.
What I'm saying is, like, what does the queer give you that the feminist doesn't already give you? Or what does the feminist give you that the Black doesn't already give you? Because a lot of people would ask that question, right? Why does it have to be the Black queer feminist lens? Why do we need all these labels?
Well, because of intersectionality.
Well, right? Look, like, what does that even mean? What does it mean in this day and age of activism? What does it mean? Why is it important today? Why do we see so many groups like Black Lives Matter, the original Black Lives Matter, Black Youth Project, Sister Song? Why do we see so many of these groups headed up by Black queer women? And they're making a point of saying that they're Black and queer.
Yeah, because by the nature of our existence, existence, we are politicized in ways that other people are not, because we are doubly marginalized. We know that. I mean, like, queer women were not accepted as part of the feminist movement in a similar way to which Black women were not accepted readily into any kind of feminist movement, or even seen as women, quite frankly. So I think that, you know, there are ways that we have to develop resistance, especially when we're dealing with multiple forms of oppression at the same time, that are really strategic and just necessary for our survival. So there is no kind of like sitting in the corner and, you know, being silent. We're weaponized in ways that someone that has not had to deal with these level of obstacles just isn't weaponized. That's what I believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, why is it that someone like Sky, for example, can bring a completely different perspective to public libraries? It seems like public libraries, that's supposed to be for everyone,
should have anything to do with sexuality.
Should have anything to do with like race and sex and or gender and sexuality. Yet she has been the most successful in this rise to this position. She has been the most successful in her programming of reinvigorating, bringing life into the communities and public libraries at a time where most people would be like, oh, libraries are dead.
Yeah, race and gender and sexuality and class affect everything. That's how systems work, right? That's like me coming, I'm in Amsterdam right now. It's like me coming here and being like, well, I'm just walking on the street. Capitalism shouldn't affect how I walk on the street. And that's ridiculous. Capitalism is a system. It's an abstraction. It affects everything, though. That's how systems work. They're not about like, you know, this system only works in this interaction between you and I, or, you know, from Mondays to Tuesdays from 10 to 2. That's not how systems work. Systems infuse themselves in all areas of our life, in our interpersonal relationships, and in how resources go out into the community. We know, so the library is a resource in the community, just like the fire department, the police, whatever, or could be a resource in the community. And we know for a fact that class and race and gender and sexuality affect how resources get distributed. We know that.
But do we really have to talk about race if we're already talking about class?
Of course we do. Am I in freshman English? Like, what is happening right now?
Throwing out some of the questions I've been confronted with over the past couple of days.
Where are you confronted with these questions?
I'm just trying to see if I'm doing us justice when...
Boo-boo, this is why I don't leave my house. I want no damn questions.
Well, I have a really good question, one that's dear to me, and one that does not have a right or wrong answer. It's a question of discussion. Mm. So Carruthers, in her interview, discussed the importance of reparations in the U.S. for Black people. Mm-hmm. She said reparations for chattel slavery, for the Jim Crow era, for the current system of mass incarceration, economic depression, and segregation.
All of it.
Why? So, you know, this is something that came up in Jamaica. The female prime minister called the UK out right before David Cameron is the prime minister of the UK, right before his visit to Jamaica. She said, let's talk about reparations. And of course, the response was, no. Why do we need to look back? We need to look forward.
Bullshit.
And in the US, a call for reparations doesn't seem realistic, right? So when we have all these things going on, police brutality, real simple shit, like don't shoot us when we walk down the street, just real basic. Mm-hmm. Why would we bring something like reparations that is so polarizing into the discussion? Is this the right time to do that? And if so, what do we hope to get out of
it? This is why I'm not a politician, because I don't give a shit when the right time is.
Okay.
Right? Like, I'm not interested in strategies around like mass and changing hearts. Fuck hearts and minds. I think that why reparations is so important is because we need to address the truth. If anyone looks at the truth of Black people in America, you can see that they need reparations, and reparations are not unprecedented. Japanese community has had reparations. The Jewish community has had reparations, right? And if anyone looks at what has been done to Black people and what continues to be done, it has not stopped. It's so clear. I think what reparation does is it shifts the blame. I mean, like, what white people love to do in any discussion about race is they like to deflect blame. They really, you know, whiteness is really is invested in its own innocence. Its innocence is necessary for whiteness to occur. And innocence is delusional, and it is absolutely, they will defend their innocence at all costs, even when not directly implicated. And in that sense, they defend whiteness and they defend white supremacy. You know, white people love to talk about how they immigrant from a peasant in Greece and, you know, made it and never participated in slavery, as if the fruit of slavery or the fruits of white supremacy are only available to people who are not immigrants or only available to people who had slaves in the past, whose ancestors had slaves in the past. I mean, like, whiteness is invested in innocence, and what reparation says and what even saying the name of it says is you are not innocent.
But
you
to what extent, to what extent will financial monetary compensation dismantle white supremacy?
Here's the thing. If someone comes and burns down my house, there's so much that's lost, my sense of safety. There's so much that's lost that I can't replace maybe my, you know, my ancestors' things. All kinds of things are just, there's some things that cannot be replaced. But of course, I'm going to go and say, no, no, you owe me the cost of these things that I can put a monetary value on. It would be so disingenuous for them to say, I'm not going to pay you that because it's, I can't replace the, like, it's not going to build your house. That's bullshit. That's not how financial recompense works. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say, okay, now you are whole. It just says, now I recognize my fault and I am sorry.
So you think that pursuing reparations in the United States is worthy?
I think that pursuing reparations in the United States is worthy, but I think that there needs to be a paradigm shift before that happens. I think what's happening and the fact that it's brought up and what we see with it being brought up is that, you know, there are some Black people and definitely most white people want to participate in, you know, what America was built on, which is collective historical amnesia. So they are so invested in this and that it's really not even a question of money. It's a question of, you know, do I have to actually fess up to this is the situation I have put myself and these people in? And the answer is eventually, yeah. Eventually, yeah.
Okay. Well, shout out to Charlene Carruthers and Sky Patrick for doing what they do. Congratulations to both of you. Thank you for making this week great. Moving on to our third segment. What are we excited about? What's making us happy? What are we looking forward to?
Well, I'm in Groningen. I am working here from a co-working space. And and so that's exciting because Amsterdam's cute. And then I'll take the train up to Groningen and have a party with my people. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the fact that our grant application made it through the first round. And we have an interview for the second round next week. We entered something. We entered a grant application for something that happens on an annual basis in Vienna, and we would like to do a project called Austria in Black, Visible Invisibility. If you haven't guessed it now what the title is about, we're interviewing Black folks on their invisibility in Austria. And I'm super thrilled that we've made it this far. I'm pretty sure we're gonna come through the interview with no problem. And then we can invite everybody out in September to come check out the project.
You miss Optimus. You forget I'm going to be involved in this interview, and I plan on wearing all of my clothes to the interview.
What's that mean?
You, me, I got to leave my house. I have to have some sort of armor. They're going to be like, bag lady. Yo,
stop it.
I'm no good in person.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm better digitally.
Oh, ooh, are you now?
You know, girl six digitally, but, you know.
You got to speak. Clearly now, people be having assumptions.
You stupid. Hey, you're full.
I'm going to use that the next time I pick somebody up. You know, I'm not so
I'm better. I am better virtually. I'm a virtual bombshell. In person, people be like, wait a second, but can she speak? Because I don't know.
Oh, stop playing games. I am thrilled. It's going to be amazing. Everybody wish us luck.
Yeah, I wish us luck.
Anything else you're looking forward to?
Nah. You know, I take it day by day. I'm like in my own special at this point. I am an African descended person who was born in South America, who is making it through another winter in Europe, in Northern Europe. And so, you know how like people that have been sober for a certain amount of time, they have chips. I'm creating those for myself.
Wow.
That every day make it and I see myself through.
You think it's a game, man. This is not.
look. Well, it's not easy.
You had all kinds of jokes when I moved to London, but we've had nothing but sunshine this week.
Sunshine.
Yes. Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Until next time, peace out.